increasing the density on Cedar Neck Road. So again, I wouldn't mind making my recommendations for conditions. And when should, I started it last time and we stopped. Did we have any of those ever, or do we want me to start over again?
You can start over again. And you were basing this, I believe, on what the MR density was, the permitted density. One thing I would point out, and I believe that I had forwarded, there is a case out there that when you look at this, instead of just looking at the MR, you may want to look at the total density in the area, no matter what kind of approval it is, just
of
because of, not just of this site, but surrounding properties, because there is the one case around Lake Comegys called the Gibson case, where they look at all the zonings and what is permitted out there and look at the totality of the neighborhood. So you need to look at what the totality of the area.
Well, could you give me some guidance in Everett on how far do I go out?
Courts don't rule that way. They don't say you look at a half mile. In this case, Lake Comegys case, it looked at all the properties in that area around Lake Comegys. And in that case, if there was a, I believe it was a unit that was proposed to be built that had three units, and a lot of the homes around the lake were large single-family dwellings, more recent. But there was a lot of high density around the property. I'm losing my voice. A lot of high density around the lake and in that area. And the court said you had to look at the totality of the area. They also looked at the case, since it was something that was permitted, looking at conditional uses. Conditional uses are not something that is given in every district for every type of property. Conditional use is in certain areas. And so to that extent, the court ruled that since it's a conditional use for this area under the code, that means it has a certain amount of permission to it. It's permissible to a certain amount because in other areas, it's just knocked out. You're not allowed to have it. So it would be certain things are allowed, but you can put conditions on it. If you take an area that's zoned for 4 units per acre, for example, and then the conditional use is applied for, and you bring it back to the 4 units per acre, in effect, what you have done is say, we've denied the conditional use because you're back at the original density. And so, usually I don't try to give this kind of advice in the public forum, but this is something that I think you need to be careful of. If you take this conditional use and you bring it back to the MR density.
Well, we didn't, the county didn't make the application, the applicant did.
Understand.
We don't control that. So you're trying to tell me if anybody makes a conditional use, we've got to disregard the underlying zoning category?
No.
Because we don't think it's, that maybe the council didn't think it was appropriate.
Because
we're increasing the density in an area where it actually referenced the busiest intersection in the area.
A conditional use is allowed in this zoning district. And under the court decision, since it was allowed in this, but for this kind of conditional use allowed in this district, then you should look at the total density in the area, and you can't just cut it down back, or you should not, unless you've got a lot of specific reasons to do so based on what's in the record. In that case, they referred to general statements such as protecting the traffic, protecting the lakefront. And the court pointed out, well, in the lakefront that was in front there, a lot of these larger homes were built right on the lake. So how is this hurting the lakefront more than these other homes? So you need to be careful when you do this to have your conditions, make sure they are specifically based on the record instead of just simply a desire to arbitrarily pull down the density to what it previously was without it. So if you're looking at that, I would suggest that instead of just coming back now and reducing the density, make sure that there's sufficient evidence that you can recite in the conditions and the reasons instead of just changing numbers.
I'll make a motion we defer on this application.
I'll second that motion.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mr. Burton, to defer on conditional use 2130. Questions on the motion?
I do have a question.
Second time, Mr. Arlett.
Yeah, based on council's suggestion and recommendation, do we need to have Janelle go back and look at the density of all of the surrounding areas, as he just stated that we should?
I believe that was in the record already. I don't remember.
Was that in the first time?
The original request from Mr. Vincent was just to look at the recent approvals, but we can go back and look at all the densities in the surrounding areas and get that information.
You can do that, but I also think maybe in Mr. Fuqua's original presentation
he did have that,
so it was in the record.
I don't remember what that was, but nonetheless.
It needs to have it.
We can pull that out of the minutes.
Yes, to defer deferral.
Mr. Burton?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Obviously, we should carry it. We defer. Please, number 2130. Next thing is our special events.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to take this one, or at least start, invite Mr. Robinson up, and we also are joined by our paramedic director, Mr. Stewart, and our special ops coordinator, Mr. Marshall. We did have our IT staff here, but they went back to the office to do their day's work. We're here to discuss the special events ordinance and really to provide council an update. I emailed out a memo last week, and it's also in your packet. I did print out a paper copy. It's in front of you. I would note also there is a document. It's a single-page document that looks like this. It has yellow highlights. It says updated September 11th on the top right. That is the ordinance document that Mr. Robinson will go over. I'll start by saying that we don't anticipate a vote today. We want to provide you an update on all the work we've been doing and also get some guidance and provide you with these documents for your review and then potentially a vote next week if council so chooses, once we've gone over this material. There's three aspects of today's presentation. It's the ordinance, it's the policies and procedure, and it's the new website portal that we want to highlight and show you. I'm going to start with the policies and procedure.
When did we first have the public hearing on this?
Oh.
How far back?
I think it was calendar year 2018. I think it was at the beginning of this year.
It was introduced on October 3rd of 2017.
Wow. Not far back.
Okay. But that was prior to P&Z's hearing and advertising.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so we've been some time working on this and also trying to adjust as we've gained feedback from council in different iterations. So let's dive into the policies and procedure. As the memo states, there is a new policies and procedure that we are going to introduce related to the ordinance, and the policy is referenced right in the ordinance, so it will be codified should the ordinance get updated. And I would think that it's probably the highlight of the efforts that we have is this new policies and procedures, because it goes into quite some detail on what we're purporting to do. And more importantly, what we're purporting not to do. I think some of the feedback we received from the public was some misunderstanding of what the council's intent was to update this this ordinance and how it would apply to certain organizations. And I think that's spelled out now in a much clearer way. So I'm not going to read. I'm going to go through this. Hopefully you have had a chance to review it, but just to highlight the policies and procedure. It is broken down into large sections, starting with section number one. It's titled Responsibility, describing who is responsible for administering this policy at the staff level. That includes the Planning and Zoning Department and the Special Operations Coordinator, which is usually a paramedic EMS staff or EOC staff together, with oversight from administration and legal. Section two is a determination of the application process. This highlights what I just referenced. This special event ordinance, we actually looked it up, it goes all the way back to the 1990s is when we first started special events reference in county code. In the county code, there's not a direct way to apply a special event, so this ordinance was drafted as such, and now we are attempting to amend it and make it more clear. It applies to events that are held outside in temporary structures and for purposes that are different from the permanent use and usual occupancy of the premise or the site. That's what this is focused on. More importantly, it's what it's not focused on and what we're trying to eliminate any confusion. Events that have a purpose that consistent with their use and usual occupancy, a special event application may not be required. These may be events that occur on property owned or occupied by a volunteer fire company, veterans organization, religious organization, charitable organization, fraternal society, events held on private property for personal enjoyment and not for business or commercial uses, and without admission charges shall not require a special event application. Events that occur on lands owned by the United States of America, State of Delaware, Sussex County, municipalities, schools, or educational institutions shall not require a special event application. However, you should remember that there's two elements to this. There's the land use side of it, and then there's the public safety side. If an event requires public safety coverage or seeks public safety services, they will still fill out this application to ensure that they are adequately covered and will go through these steps. Next section is the application process. Again, it's a six-step process, which just spells out from the beginning to the end when an application is submitted. We envision these applications being submitted online. I'll show you the website portal. I'm very proud of the work the staff has done in our IT department, along with guidance from this group on all the information that we will require and will allow us to adequately review these applications in a timely manner.
So we have an application form?
We do, and I will show it to you. And it's quite good, and I would say a much better improvement than what we currently use. We also heard during the public hearing process comments about the coordination among the county offices, and we've met at length to discuss that and make sure that our coordination between emergency services and planning and zoning and administration has been improved. So this process outlines the six steps to go through application, review, notification, as well as payment. I will go through what it takes to cover these events from a public safety standpoint. If it is deemed to require payment, we do have that in effect. The payments, I will tell you, are there just to cover costs. The county does not make money when we staff these events with our public safety staff or our equipment or our mobile command unit or 911 dispatcher. This is just there to cover costs, and quite honestly, I'm not even sure that we're covering the total costs. There are hidden costs involved in the time and effort it takes to prepare for an event, the efforts it takes to get to an event, the day before to stage. You can't send staff out at the time the event starts because you're going to be fighting everyone else that's going to the same event. So you've got to be there ahead of time and be prepared to adequately staff that.
Do you think it's wise to get your payment 30 days after? You don't think it should be 30 days prior to the event that they pay?
So
the fees that are associated?
Mr. Marshall administers this on a daily basis.
I'll address that to you, sir. What we do is we send them an estimate. We ballpark the time that we're going to be there.
Right.
But it says in the current existing contract or application as it's listed that it will be adjusted either less or more depending on the time on scene. And so if we have a incident that goes from 9 to 4, but we run a couple of patients out of there, or people have to transport, they have to do reports and get the gear back. So those are the types of things that can affect that. So prepayment, unless you want to just limit it to the set time and not worry about the changes, and then if...
Well, it could be a two-step process in the payment. Initial payment to, you know, just... you know, an estimate or whatever you call it, or a flat fee, and then the final would be calculated over what was actually needed. And the other question is, we're only charging, this is only a fee for paramedics, nothing else?
Paramedics, dispatchers, and then the mobile command unit.
Okay, so the county, there's no other fees associated with this whole thing?
That's correct. It's only for staffing at the time of the event. There is some time built in for going to the event and returning to the event. There is no time built in for staffing for the review of the application and things of that nature. And again, this is just to try to cover our costs. I would say this is only at the events at which we charge. There are some very small events where Mr. Marshall's team will appear and will cover the event with folks that are already scheduled to be working that day. For the paid events where we've been asked to be there, like the upcoming triathlon, those are set and there's a contract and they pay us for those services. Generally speaking, we do not have an issue with receiving the receipt of payment, generally speaking, and having the payment after the event required, because the math is done and the math is correct at that point. It works for us, generally speaking.
What do we do if they don't pay?
So
we do if they don't
pay? Have we had that issue?
We haven't done this yet. They don't get a permit. We've
had this. Sure. Yeah,
now we've sent bills out.
Sure.
Yeah, sure we have.
Now, if they don't pay, you don't give them a permit next time. Is that correct?
What if they don't get them?
All right. I'll take them in order. So we generally have not had an issue with payment, and I say that generally with one caveat. We currently have an issue where we have not been paid for services rendered earlier this year for an event that took place earlier in June, I believe it was.
And where was that located?
July. That event was located on the eastern side of the county, off Route 1, north of Lewis.
And at where?
And it was an event that was a concert that was hosted at an establishment called Hudson Fields.
Oh, thank you.
But there was, so we haven't been paid for June, and they had an August event?
Not been paid for July, correct?
Well, they see, they're grandfathered in now. They're exempt from any of this, though.
No, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're not exempt from this.
All right.
Not exempt from this.
We don't have to have our paramedics here.
But to Mr. Wilson's comment is that we issued another permit without being paid.
The dates on the payment due, Glenn, were?
So the dates for the payment, we did this, so this is historic. It's what we did last year with them. Mm-hmm. It's what we do with Freeman Stage. I don't bill them for every event. We do it in clumps. My end is to provide the appropriate emergency services, and then we send the bill on up. We had a discussion. The best thing that we felt on our end was to be there.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with
that. So that they were just outside that time frame, and as far as the billing process, that's not my concern.
Right, but we have a responsibility to make sure we get paid for our services, and that's our job up here to make
you
sure.
You say we don't collect money from Freeman every time? Is that what you're saying?
No, sir. The history has been I do them monthly. It's. I don't think it would be cost effective on our end to build each event. We've never had a historically. We don't have problems with payment. We don't. So.
Do we just bill for the time of the mobile command center? Or, I mean, that's $1 million unit. Do we just bill for the staff in the vehicle, but not the vehicle itself?
No, there's a dual payment if the mobile command unit is utilized. It's for the unit itself, and it's for the dispatcher inside the unit, so the 911 dispatcher that works and operates out of the unit. Most of the time when that unit's dispatched, it's also hosting support agencies, so state police, DLDOT, paramedics. We've even had interagency with other municipalities like Ocean City operate out inside the unit for the events that's taking place outside. And so to answer your question, there is a dual charge for the staff and the unit.
When was the last time a special event needed a command center?
That's what I was wondering.
You're going to ask that? Go ahead and ask it, Sam.
That's a good question.
Okay, you can ask it. You take it.
Why do we really need them? Why not? Why couldn't the paramedics be there? Why do we need a mobile home unit there?
No, I'm just saying, when was the last time that was actually utilized at a special event?
I'll tell you, the next time it's going to be used is next weekend at Bethany Beach's Triathlon. So the new year has a lot of capabilities. We have the ability, again, to make a command post in there.
Okay.
We have the ability to, it's got a camera capability, which is most certainly going to be ideal for next weekend. We have the ability to patch together different radio systems, which is imperative when you have thousands of people in the water, on the beach, and out on the road. It really proved itself, this was not a special event, but at the Mount Air Fire. And when we were able to plug a drone in direct footage and able to determine whether there was going to be a hazardous material release due to the temperatures, and then as far as the fire. So it's becoming, you have to understand, in that process, that system is brand new. So it was always a punk and chunk, any of the large-scale events it usually arrived at. The resources it has on board now makes it even that much more user-friendly for those of us.
It was fireworks in Rehoboth.
Mm-hmm.
It was fireworks in Bethany or
Lewis.
And Lewis. It was at request at the air show in Ocean City.
It's requested, but I'm just saying, do we require that on our end, when there's a special event of a certain size, Todd, do we tell the applicant they have to have, and they're going to pay for this service? Because we've invested taxpayers' dollars, and what I think we're trying to do is make sure that the fee, you know, makes sense for the value of what we're offering down there. It's just not a token amount.
So just the process
giving
is...
the candy store away every time.
The process is it comes in through Janelle first at this point.
Okay.
She does hers. It comes to me. So historically, we have events, as Councilman Vincent pointed out, that we are there regularly with that unit.
Okay.
We now sit there, and I talk with Joe, and Joe and I go back and forth and say, is this a unit that we, is this an event we need to? There are more requests coming in now because of the new capabilities of the unit. So, yes, and they are told that's included in the contract or the application that I send out. It's with the staffing of us, the staffing of the EOC, whether it's just a dispatcher
could
that is rolled into one bill.
The last time it was used for an event was when, Todd?
Oh, 4th of July.
4th of July, okay. Mm. And what could you share with us what the fee was for that?
That was a community event, 4th of July fireworks in Rehoboth, and then the city of Lewis also requested our presence, and Bethany, I believe. So,
okay.
So in those community events, under the criteria that we've used in the past and that we are suggesting we continue to use, those don't receive a charge. That's the town asking.
Okay. Could you tell me a time when that unit was used by some applicant? And how much did we get?
The last mobile command unit, since we just received the new mobile command unit, was my memory is Pumpkin Chunkin, where it was on site for a number of days and it was charged by the county for being present. That event doesn't take place anymore, and it was, I mean, we can pull the numbers. It was,
I'm just curious, how much did we
that event total with paramedics and dispatcher and the mobile command unit was thousands of dollars, probably near $10,000 total.
If I called up and said I need that mobile unit for a one-day event, how much would it?
It says right here it's.
So for a paramedic, it's $60 an hour. For a dispatcher, it's $40 an hour. For the mobile command unit, it is $40 an hour.
The mobile command unit, that's what I was trying to find out, is
$40.
$40 an hour. Dispatchers for 40, paramedics for 60.
It'll take a while to get it recoup our investment.
I started by saying that the county doesn't make money on this. We're just there to try to even cover our costs. But case in point, we need to be at these events. As alluded to previously, there was an event earlier this summer with a significant injury, and because we were there on site with our paramedics and our support agencies through the Lewis Ambulance Company, we were able to attend to a patient within less than a minute.
And that's the one we haven't been paid for.
Yeah, but I mean, again, those are private units,
in a beautiful world
and
we live in.
And but I mean, we don't charge our community or residents anything for the use for paramedics.
No, sir.
Correct.
No, Bill.
So there you go.
No, they pay. Residents are paying for it.
No. But I'm just saying, but there's not a bill. We don't send them a bill for the use of paramedics. These are specific issues for special events, private sector, right? Not municipalities in your example that's been provided. These are private sector units.
George, it could be justified. I'm trying to think of the word justified.
I hate to go back to my question.
Yes, I...
What do we do if they don't pay?
So if they don't pay, correct. You know, as Glenn referenced earlier, in the case this summer, we thought it was more important for us to be there and worry about getting paid later, so we ended up attending the second event. We have a couple of options. We always have the legal option. If we're not paid, we can go to court and recoup funding that way. The other option is what Mr. Wilson referenced. The next time an event happens, if it happens in a frequency that we're not able to get our money back through court action, we would refuse to cover that event. Perhaps with the approval of this new ordinance, that may even stop the event from taking place, because we've had added more teeth to the ordinance where, like the state police or the Alcohol and Beverage Commission, we have the ability to say, no, you're not allowed to hold the event because you don't have proper approval from the county.
And just for everybody to keep in mind, Hudson Fields is exempt from all this.
So I wouldn't say...
They are not exempt from public safety ordinance.
They are not. Even during their testimony at the Board of Adjustment hearing, it was repeatedly stated and in the findings that there are different agencies that they must go through, including the county.
So a concert, the next concert, and since we haven't been paid for the one, they don't still haven't paid. We could deny them the concert. Tell me we can do that ever.
Under the Board of Adjustment for the finding that they had, and even their own testimony during that hearing, was that they understood that they were obligated under all these different agencies, and they specifically mentioned the county, the state police, the traffic, and all of those. And it's in their finding. Now, with your policy that you're having here, you're trying to put teeth into it, the state, that we can take one additional step with anyone, not just them, that if someone doesn't come through with it, doesn't pay for it, we could prevent it.
We can stop the next concert if this payment hasn't been made.
That has nothing to do with the Board of Adjustment. That has nothing to do with their thing. That has to do with the policy that is out there existing that we're trying to.
Services being requested and payment not being made.
Yeah, that has.
It's as simple.
I'll guarantee you that won't stop that event. But okay,
that's separate.
That's okay.
It's totally separate.
That's what you tried to tell me.
And there's also an issue too. That's a fee. Essentially a permit fee or a fee to the county that would come under the Clean Hands Ordinance, right, too. So yes, that would apply, I think, to the applicant, you know, any applicant, and I think theoretically any property owner, too.
But I just want to, but not Hudson Fields, it's because they're not getting special event ordinance permits. So if you don't get the special event, don't have to get the special event permit, this doesn't apply.
You have to get this permit. You have to get this.
Yes.
The public safety is separate.
Okay. Right. I've heard that. I will see.
And
I'm not saying I'm going to do it. I'm just saying it's supposed to.
As I referenced earlier, there's two sides to this. There's the land use side and the public safety side. We're referencing the public safety side when it comes to events that take place, and either one is there or we need to be there due to the nature of the event.
And I'll ask this because it brought up a good point, and take the Hudson Field piece out of it, because you've got a landowner, right, and then you actually have the event organizer.
Promoter.
Not always the same people.
Correct.
So the question I would have for you is, the bill for this, or for all, I should say, does it go to the landowner or does it go to the event holder?
Goes to the event organizer.
So the bill is going to the event organizer, not...
Correct.
Not, and if they are different than the landowner, then there you go.
The majority of them are.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
Is there a way that we could make it go, if the event organizer doesn't pay it, that it goes to the property owner? Because most of the time, violations go to the property owner.
On the application form, it identifies the property owner, the tax parcel number.
But can we collect from the property owner if the event organizer dissolves, falls apart, the organization, you know, whatever, can we always go back to the property owner? We should be able to, I would think.
Under the Clean Hands Ordinance, plus, you know, if we were to collect, I think...
But if it's not written down somewhere...
Does the property owner on this, you're more familiar with this document, does the property owner also sign it? Or is it just identified?
There's a reference, I'm positive.
Because it...
It's identified, but...
Yes, it may be a good idea to have the landowner sign the property acknowledging responsibility.
We can add that as well. I think that's an issue.
Yeah, we can add that easily, and there is event information, which I'll go over in a moment when we get to the application and show you what we have built in as a result of this, these direction and feedback. All right, moving on, the section that we stopped on, section five, within the policy, outlines the steps needed when our event coordinator gets with the special operations coordinator and reviews the elements that are needed to be reviewed to determine if we should be there. And then finally, section six talks about the decision criteria. Again, the summary of all this is a much more well thought out, hopefully in simplistic terms, policy that our stakeholders can follow. We've added a special events quick reference with questions that we've received or questions we've received in the past with answers. I think this is a great amount of information and guidance for folks that are asking, how do I get an application through and what do I need to do? I want to highlight the last part of this regarding our support agencies. Some of the guidance I received from council was our interaction with the state agencies that also get involved with special events. As a result of that, I contacted the three major agencies, and that would be the Department of Transportation, the Delaware State Police, and the Delaware Fire Marshal, and talked to them about improving our interagency coordination when it comes to these events. All three were very much willing to do that and receptive to our ability to have the same information. And the way that's going to look is when an application comes through the county, we're going to set up means to directly send that application information to these agencies and any other agencies that choose to receive it so that when we get the information here in the county, they get the information at the same time. And it's still their authority and it's under their purview to determine what their needs are and what they're going to require of the event. But at least they're seeing it from us and we're seeing it from them. So all three agencies were very much willing. I've put their information on the policy. And as you'll see in a moment, I've put their information, their contact information on the form. And there's a section on the form that directly asks the applicant, are you contacting these agencies, yes or no? And with that response, we will know if they are adequately prepared for the type of event that they are purporting to host. Okay, I'll quickly go through this form. This is the new form online. It is live, just for the sake of showing you this, but it will be live once we approve the ordinance.
Where is that when you go to our website, to begin our website? Where is the thing shown on there?
So we will have, once approved, we will have a link directly on our website. It currently resides, the old one resides under paramedics department, EOC department, and under the department listing. So it's in multiple places. It will clearly be visible for applicants, including under the planning and zoning department, for those that to know how to apply for a special event.
So you were on number five, is that correct? You don't say public safety services. Was that number five one time? Is that what you said?
We were, if you're back on the policy, Mr. Wilson,
I'm back on
section five, yeah, public safety services.
And the word I'm looking at is appropriate.
What's that?
Appropriate. Public safety. Public safety. If they think that one ambulance and one paramedics be enough, why didn't know? For them, if they think that,
because they're probably not experts in the paramedic field.
It doesn't say that. It says if it says where it means that where they determine is appropriate for public safety, the arrangement of the event.
This is the county's determination.
The county doing that.
That's what we're doing, sir.
That's what you're doing?
Yes, sir. Not the organizer, it's us.
The organizer's going to make that decision.
No. They are.
I mean, the Emmets is who's going to make the decision, right?
It comes into the special operations.
The paramedics is who's making the decision.
That's correct.
It looks like they took all the rights away from them.
What's that, sir?
It looks like you took all the rights away from them.
From who?
They don't have any right to make any choices for themselves.
What are you talking about?
I don't know, I'm just thinking, what, if I was on this side of the street.
Who are you talking about, though? I'm trying to figure out.
You're talking about the organizer?
I'm talking about the organizer, of course. Who do you think I'm talking about, George?
I don't know.
Well, it's going to be the same thing, I would think, Mr. Wilson, is that they would not tell DSP how many troopers they need out there. DSP's going to tell them, you're going to get X.
Well, look at this, look at number five here. It says, this section describes the factors involved in determining the appropriate public safety coverage of an event.
Right. That's what our people use.
Other words, our.
That's what Joe Thomas and the paramedics use to determine.
It's up to Joe Thomas.
Yes.
Where he takes that $1 million.
For the command person, yeah.
He takes that $1 million bus out there.
Whether he does or not.
$1.5 million.
But Stan, he gets $40 if it's parked there.
Right, look at the money we're going to make.
I know.
Get rich.
We're going to get rich.
Okay.
I got one. Anywhere on this application, is there any reason, or should we be asking if they have proof of insurance? I know most of the time, if anything you do, anything, anywhere, somebody wants proof of insurance. Just all they got to do is show something. And do we have any of that? Because, again, that's kind of part of public safety. Somebody gets hurt. We want to know somebody's got insurance, and the property owner really should know.
If that's the direction council wants to take, and I'm looking to you to give me that direction.
Couldn't we be brought into a lawsuit?
We were taking the other approach, where we perhaps would.